For those of you who do catch up online with this class, and if you access it through Torah Media Atlanta, you should be aware that Yisrael Killian, who runs Torah Media Atlanta, reached out because donations to that site are down. For those of you who do take advantage of it, I would suggest making a donation online when you do use it so that he can continue that site. It is May the 20th, and this is Shmuel Bays, and the shir is sponsored L'Zecher Nishmas for Shmuel ben Yisrael, Shlomo ben Yisrael, for his yard site. And we are in Perek Yud Zayin, chapter 17, and we're of the Pasuk Tezvav, verse 15. I want you to know that I had planned on getting through this, the rest of this perek, which isn't that much. You know, it's another 15 psukim to finish. And then as I was preparing, just the material kept on piling higher and higher. And I don't think we're actually going to finish the perek tonight, but we will do our best. So, and you'll see that we'll have a Shavuos connection as well as we go through. So, the last thing we had mentioned is that Achitofel had given his Eitzah, his advice, to go and attack David right away with a small force, go and attack that would scare off the people who are with him, leaving him essentially by himself, easily defeated. It could kill him, and then that would be that. And then Avshalom's rebellion would be complete. That was Achitofel's advice. Hushai Ha'arki, the clever Hushai Ha'arki, using all of his talents, manages to convince Avshalom and the people who are with him that actually just this once Achitofel did not get it right, and really it would be very dangerous to attack David now. David is a warrior, and he's got his back against the wall, and he and his men are going to fight fiercely, and we're going to lose a lot of men if we attack right now. And anyway, we won't get David because he'll go into hiding. So the whole fight will result, even if we do kill a lot of David's men, but we're going to get a lot of casualties, and then word will get out that we were badly beaten, and that will undermine the entire rebellion, because the whole rebellion is based on popular opinion. And if the popular opinion is that the rebellion is falling apart, then we're finished. So rather, let's wait, let's regroup, let's gather all the Jewish people together, we'll go with a huge force and go and attack David and kill every last man. And that was Hushai's advice. Hushai knew that Achitofel's advice was really better and would have been sound, but he was hoping to give David some time to get away. And as we learned, David had davened that Achitofel's advice be undermined. And Hashem listens to David's davening. And here he makes it that they would listen to Hushai and not Achitofel. So now Hushai has to get word to David. So why does he need to get word to David? Because Hushai is no fool. And he realizes that the fact that they're following him is not to be relied upon in the long run. Hushai is very concerned that at any moment Avshalom can come to his senses, or his advisors can come to their senses and realize, hey, one second, his advice is much better than Hushai's. So right now, the wind is blowing in the right direction, but it could be at any moment the wind will change directions. So Hushai knows he can't just say, okay, avoided that, and go to sleep. He's got to act upon it. So we know that David had set up a series, a way to get messages from Hushai to David, and that was through the sons of Evyasar and Sadok, the erstwhile Kohen Gadol and the current Kohen Gadol, and their sons could be messengers. So, Tezvav 15, Vayomer Hushai al Tzadok ve'al Evyasar ha-Kohanim. Hushai said to Tzadok and to Evyasar the Kohanim, so he speaks to them in private. Kazos v'chazos yo'atz Achitofel asav shalom. Such and such is how Achitofel advised Avshalom. Ve'ziknei Yisrael and the elders of Yisrael. V'chazos v'chazos yo'atz yani. And such and such is the way I advised. Ve'atai now, shilchu mehera. Send quickly. V'hagidu leDavid lemar, and tell David, saying, Al tolen halayla v'avros hamidbar, do not go to sleep tonight at the crossings of the Midbar, meaning on this side of the Jordan River, this side of the Yarden, on the west side. V'gam avar tavar, you should pass over right now. Don't wait in the middle of the night. You need to cross the Delaware, I mean the Yarden. Pen yevula la melech, lest it become known to the king. Blia means to swallow. It means it'll become absorbed to the king. It's a poetic way to speak. I don't know that I'm familiar with that way of using the language, but that it'll become known. Rashi says that someone may quietly approach the king. It's one thing if someone comes to the king openly, then I can try to argue my point again. But who says I'll even know about it? It could be someone will go to the king in private and make him come to his senses and realize that, hey, you're doing the wrong thing. You got to follow Achitofel, not Hushai. And I won't even know about it in order to try to talk my way out of it. So, Pen Yivul al HaMelech, lest it become known to the king, Ulechol HaMashayito, and all the people that are with him. And they're going to go back to what really they should do, which is to attack right now. So, we've bought some time, but we don't know how much time we've actually bought. And therefore, you need to get away. You cannot, right now, sit on this side of the Jordan River. You are in danger of being attacked now, and you're in no shape to defend yourself. So you need to keep going and cross the Yarden.
Is it spelled the same or not spelled the same?
It's the same. Yeah.
So it doesn't mean lest the king and his men be swallowed up.
The way the Rashi... It could be means that. The way Rashi says it, I'm not familiar with the usage. It'll be told to the king, meaning to Absalom, in secret and in swallowing. He's using the word swallowing to mean like a secretive way.
Okay.
That's what he's using.
This translation says, lest the king be destroyed somehow by another... English, I know.
Okay, Dr. Fry, that's what you wanted to say, right? That the king here means David. That less
well, I was thinking. That, yeah. I was thinking that it looked like less.
That's interesting.
Less King David be swallowed up than all his men with him, but apparently not. So
you know, the Mitzvah Sion says it that way. I didn't see that before. I translated it like Rashi.
Right.
But okay. Mitzvah Sion says what you're saying. That's right.
So maybe it deliberately has a double meaning.
Mm. It could be.
Okay.
Now, he told this to Avyasar and to Tzadok. But they're not the ones who are going to deliver the message. They can't leave. They're in the Beis HaMikdash. That would be very suspicious if they left. So we were never told the sons of Tzadok and Evyasar, we were never told how were they going to secretly get from Yerushalayim to wherever David was. How would they get out without people knowing? So now we get a little more information. V'yahonos and v'achimatz omdim be'en rogel. Yonas and Achimatz were standing in Ein Rogel, which Rashi explains is a place where they used to wash clothing. And when they used to wash clothing, in their day, of course, there were no machines to do it. They used to, if there was wool clothing, would have to be banged. They'd have to be
scrubbed.
Yeah, well, really, first you have to bang it. If you have grime and dirt, you got to loosen it.
Right.
So the way they would...
Like you beat a rug, right.
And the way they would do it is they would actually trample the clothing. It would, you know, they put it down on a hard surface, and they would like trample it with their feet. That's why it's called Ein Rogel.
Oh,
Rogel is less than regal, feet. So they were at a laundromat.
But doesn't Ein mean no?
Ain with an alf means no. This would mean I.
So the sight of the feet.
The what?
The sight of the feet.
Okay, it could be.
Or a spring. Couldn't it mean a spring?
It could mean a spring also.
A spring where they wash the clothes.
That could be. That's right. That's probably correct. Right. The spring where they wash the clothing. So they were hanging out at the laundromat. Mm-hmm. Where you wouldn't expect to find two people who are... The heir apparents, or one of them is the heir apparent, to be the Kohen Gadol, right? That's not where you're going to discover
which
them.
Which one's the son of which?
So we had before, I think,
I
don't remember.
Order?
We had it before. I think Achimatz is of Yasser.
So they're in the same order that you're mentioning as the fathers.
Yeah. Yehonatan. Achimatz is Tzadok. Oh, and Yehonatan is of Yasser.
Right.
Yeah. And so it puts of Yasser's son first. So it could be he was older. Could be he was more of the leader. So there, they were there in Ein Rogel. So they were not, they were keeping a low profile. They were not showing themselves in Yerushalayim because they knew they'd have to get away. And if they were noticed in Yerushalayim, then they wouldn't be able to get out easily. They are prominent people. So they, I don't know if they were in disguise or whatever it is, but they were in a place that you wouldn't expect to find them. V'halcha ha-shivcha v'yigida lahem. They were, now we find that there was also a maidservant involved. There was a maidservant who was given a message to give to Yehonatan and Achimatz. Now, it doesn't tell us what the Shivcha was told and what she told them. I suspect, although I don't have any proof to this, I suspect that whatever it was she was told, it was told in code, and that her delivery was a code, and that she wouldn't have realized what was happening. Because, first of all, we don't know who the Shivcha is, and it could be she was a very trustworthy servant, but if she was, you would think the Navi would make mention of who she was. And if she was someone who was a very highly trusted maid, then you would think the Navi would actually mention her name. Moreover, it means you're bringing someone else into confidence,
mm-hmm, right.
And that makes it more dangerous, not just for them, but for her. It's to protect both them and her, the less she knows, the better. So it doesn't say this, but I suspect that's the way any of us would have done it. We would have devised the code and not let the Shivcha know what's happening, having done it in a way that she wouldn't realize what was actually happening. But at any rate, whatever it is, a Shivcha was sent to tell them. And they would go, that this is the idea. They should go and tell the King David. Because they couldn't be seen to come to the city. They couldn't come into Yerushalayim proper. Everybody would recognize them, and they would never be able to get out again without arousing suspicion. So they needed to keep a low profile outside Yerushalayim. Here they're told by the Shivcha, and now they're supposed to run to David.
So this is the Shivcha of the Kohen Gadol?
Either the Shivcha of the Kohen Gadol or a Shivcha. You know, that's what I'm not sure about. I'm not sure about if it's the Shivcha of the Kohen Gadol, it might be she was a trustworthy person. And they actually brought her into confidence. I don't know. At any rate, yeah.
You know, an interesting thing, I think, is that if they were hanging out by the laundry, maybe that's how they could send a woman out from Yerushalayim to this laundry.
Right, that's what I imagine. I imagine she came with clothing.
Because the women were the ones who were doing the laundry, you know, so she would not be...
It makes them stand out even the more, because they're men.
It could be that the part about the trampling of the clothing was done by men. Because that was probably the grunt work, was the banging, and that may have been relegated to men. But it would make sense to send a shivcha out with a pile of clothing. I mean, that makes sense. We're just going to take it to the laundromat. So that was the plan. However, it went awry. Yudches 18, Vayaro Samnar, a lad saw them. Now a lad saw them. So what if he saw them? But he recognized them, right? And now there's a problem because these two people, what are they doing out there? Vayagim la'avshalom, he went and he told Avshalom. Vayelchu shnehem mehera, they went quickly. Apparently they realized that they were discovered. So they ran quickly. Vayavoh el beis ish bebachurim, they got as far as the house of a man in Bachurim. This man was apparently loyal to David. V'lo be'er b'chatzero, he had a well in his... courtyard. Vayer Dusham, they went down into the well.
Wow. Now, why don't they mention the name if he's such a lawyer?
Right, I don't know. That's a good question. I don't know the answer. Now they're going into a well, you only do that as a last resort because in a well there's no place to escape.
Right, you're there.
Right? If they're going into the well, it means they were hotly pursued and they felt like if they keep going they're gonna get caught. So they needed to hide. But the problem with hiding is there's no way out. So this is where they hid. So you just see the desperation. They really are in trouble. Vatika Ha'isha, so it doesn't tell us this woman's name either. This is likely a husband and wife. The woman took Vatifros es hamasach al pnei ha-be'er. She spread a covering, like a cloth covering, over the well. Vatishtach alav harifos. And she spread upon it the rifos. The rifos were the ground up wheat, not ground up into flour. But prior to grinding into flour, you first break it down a little bit. So this was it had gone through the first breaking down process. So she took that pile of wheat and she put it over this piece of material. And apparently it was a pretty good disguise that it was not clear that there was a well underneath all of this. V'lo noda davar, and the thing was not known. Vayavo avnei avshalom el ha'isha, so the servants of Avshalom came to the woman, habaisa, to the house. So she's in the house. I don't know if the man was there and they questioned her specifically, or if the man had gotten away so that they would talk to her because she would be less suspicious. Vayomru, and they said, Aye Achimatz v'Yehonasan, where is Achimatz and Yehonasan? V'tomer lahem ha'isha, the woman said to them, Avru michal hamayim, they crossed the gathering of water, meaning they left already, they crossed the Yarden. Vayavakshu, and they searched for Matzo, and they couldn't find. Vayashuvu Yerushalayim, and they returned to Yerushalayim. Now, we didn't learn together what I'm about to ask you, but does anybody know that what this is reminiscent of a woman claiming that they had crossed the Yarden? Okay, so when the spies went into Yericho, Rachav hid them, and then when the king's agents came to the house, she said they crossed the Yarden. Hurry, go catch them.
Right.
And this is taking a page out of that. And in fact, one of the Mefarshim I saw said that this woman was actually. She was mimicking what Rachav. She knew what Rachav had done, and she was now doing the same thing. So she saves these people, which ultimately saves David.
Wow, this is amazing.
I mean,
she plays an amazing role.
She plays an amazing role.
Endlessly.
Right, and we don't know her name. We don't know her name. We don't know her husband's name. We have no idea who these people are, and they have played an incredible role of saving David.
And she was smart enough not to say, I don't know what you're talking about.
Right. She
went that away.
Right, right.
No, about not even knowing who they are.
Right. Now, I want to draw your attention to something. The term Michal Hamayim, the gathering of water, is an unusual term. You don't have it elsewhere in Tanakh. I believe this is the only place you have it. In modern Hebrew, I believe it means a water tank. Like a hot water tank in the person's home. I think that's the term used, or it's a term that can be used to mean that. The gathering of water. But it is inescapable when you see this term to miss the name
Michal.
I
was thinking of Michal because she also said David left.
She saved him.
She went out the window. Yeah.
She saved David, right? Yeah. Remember back then when David was his life was first in danger, one of the very first times that David was ever under threat of being killed, Michal put a fake David in bed. And she had him, lowered him out the window, and he ran off. So here, this woman is doing what Michal had done. That is, Michal is the first woman that we have to credit with there being a David HaMelech. Mm-hmm. If it wasn't for Michal, then David would have been killed back then. Mm-hmm. Now David has gotten away from many dangers since then, as we know. But that was the first. Mm-hmm. And there, as you know, Michal was acting out of loyalty to her husband and to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, even though it was her own father who was out to get David. But she knew what the right thing to do was, and she acted the way she knew what was right. So we learned this story where Michal was criticized for later on looking down at the way David danced in front of the Aron. That is the one place where she is criticized. But other than that, we know many places where she is lauded for her not just for her righteousness, but for her Mesiras Nefesh, her self-sacrifice in preserving David HaMelech. So here, here we have a story of an unnamed couple, particularly the woman, who saves David's life. Again, not directly, it's indirectly, because she's saving the messengers who are going to run to give David the warning, so then he'll get away. And the Navi chooses a very unusual phrase to mean the water, the Yarden. I suspect the reason why the Navi does this is the Navi wants us to remember Michal. Because if it wasn't for her, this story wouldn't happen. So ultimately, she's credited for everything, because it all goes back because she's the first one to stick her neck out on behalf of David. And so here, if anything, it seems to me this woman is drawing her strength from Rachav and from Michal. Those are the two women, as we know today. So we like to look back at Tanakh and try to draw our inspiration from those who came before us. And typically women will take inspiration from women, men will take inspiration from men. I mean, that's normal to do that. We get our inspiration. So, especially you learn with a girl who's going to be turning bas mitzvah. Right now I have a daughter who's going to be bas mitzvah, mitzvah Hashem, at the end of the summer. So I'm learning with her. Her name happens to be Michal. So I'm learning with her about Michal. Well, who else am I going to learn? I'm going to tell her about her name, and make her proud of what she... So, and you want them to get inspiration from the women in Tanakh, the ones who we look to. We're not the first ones to do that. Here you have a woman in Tanakh, mm-hmm. who I believe is getting her inspiration from two previous women, one not so long before her, and one a few hundred years before her, Rachav a few hundred years before her, and Michal, who would have been in her lifetime, most likely. And so she is drawing her strength in order to stick her neck out on behalf of David HaMelech, which means on behalf of HaKadosh Baruch Hu.
When all of these things are happening, I mean, because it seems kind of chancy to say they've crossed over when you know at some point David's on one side or the other, he's going to cross over and whatever. Are we talking that it's like a straight line across from Yerushalayim to the Yarden, or are they south or north? Like where?
So I think it seems to me they're slightly north. They're northeast of Yerushalayim. She knows that David is still on the west side of the Yarden because they're the ones who are delivering the message to cross. Mm-hmm. She probably didn't know what the message was. But right now, David is still on the west side of the Yarden. They're the ones who are going to tell David to get across.
I think it'd still be risky to say that because let's say they would stay on the other side looking for him.
Right.
Then he can't cross.
Right. That's true.
But they went back to Yerushalayim.
Yeah, but he would...
I would have said something like, oh, they doubled back and went to Yerushalayim. You must have just missed them.
Right.
You know, to send them in the opposite direction instead of the same direction that you know the person's going to flee.
So I think that the reason why she couldn't say that is that most likely there were a lot of pursuers. The very fact that they went down into a be'er tells me that they felt cornered. So I think that would be very suspicious to say they went...
Right. That would make sense.
So she had to lead them away.
Now, who's on the other side of the Yarden? Who is it the...
Well, it's Jewish territory. That would be where Reuven and Gad and half of Menashe were. We're going to end up over there soon, as you'll see. Okay. The battle is going to end up taking place over there. Not tonight. We'll get to it next time.
Aren't they afraid of drowning or something in the bear?
Yeah, so, good. So I don't know how low they went. A be'er means, it's a good question, a be'er, there's two words for a water hole. There's a be'er and a bor. A bor is a hole in the ground that holds rainwater.
Okay.
Sometimes it's empty, sometimes it's full. As you know from Yosef, ha-bor reik. The bor was empty. Ein bo mayim, there was no water. That's a bor. A be'er is a spring. Meaning there is natural water underneath, and you go down into it and you get to the water. So this is a bear, which means there is definitely water down there. Right. On the other hand, it may have been clear how high the water gets. It may have stayed at a very steady place. That I don't know. But that's a good point. They may have gotten wet. I mean, maybe they just held their heads above. I don't know. Right.
It's interesting that there's water, which is like Torah in both of these places.
Yes, yes, yes. Was that?
I said tread water for a couple of hours.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Right.
Well, did they have ropes with pails? Like,
yeah, they probably
holding onto the rope
or something. Yeah, or something else, or the stones to hold on to.
To hold both of them?
Yeah, one I could see. Two.
Yeah. Chafalf 21. Vayihi acharei lechtam, and it was after they left. Vayalu meha be'er, and they got out of the. They came out of the well. And they went and they told the king David. Vayomru al David, and he told to David, Kumu v'ivru mehera samayim, quickly get up and cross the water. Ki kach hayat aleichem achitofel, because such is the way Achitofel advised. So they don't even need to tell David that Hushai did this and Achitofel. The fear is that it doesn't matter what happened already. Achitofel is going to get the upper hand and you're going to be in big trouble. Chaf Beis 22, Vayakam David v'chol ha'am asher ito, David got up and all the nation that was with him. Vayabru sayadin, they crossed through Jordan. Ad or haboker, to the light of the morning. It took a long time. He had a lot of people with him. And remember, it's pitch black.
Right.
There's no lights on the ferry. It's rushing water. It's dangerous. Ad achad lo nedor, until one was not left behind. Everybody was able to cross. They got everybody across the water. Until one was not left behind, they did not cross the Yarden. They all were able to cross apparently safely, which in itself is a minor miracle. They were all able to get across. They were able to do it. Even though there's no oil painting made out of this crossing, but they did cross.
It was nighttime.
So was the other one.
Be black.
Right. Okay. Now. This next pasuk is going to take us a while to cover. So I'm going to read this one, and I'm just going to read this one. That's it. V'achisofel ra'a kilo nes sa atza so. Achisofel saw that his advice was not done. V'achavosh es achamor, he saddled the donkey. Vayakam vayelach el beiso eliro, and he got up and he went to his house, to his city. Vayitzav el beiso, and he made a will.
Wow.
He commanded his household. He made a will. He wrote a will. In other words, he saw it's all over. Forget it. He knew what should have been done, what wasn't done. Now the rebellion is going to get crushed. He's sure of it. Vayechanek, and he was strangled.
He strangled himself.
Yeah.
So that's not so clear. That's not what it says. It says that he was strangled. Vayamas, okay. And he died. Vayikaver bekever aviv, and he was buried in the burial place of his father.
Wow.
So it appears one can read this that he committed suicide, but we're going to see that that's not so simple.
Okay.
Why didn't he go with his donkey and go after David instead of going back to his house and?
Well, he presumes that David is not going to accept him. He went with the rebellion. He presumes anybody who went with
to go kill him.
Oh, to go kill him.
He knows already that God's on David's side. Is that what he sees?
No. By himself, he's no match against David and David's men. What he was advising was a group going to attack.
And since no group went.
Yeah. So he's convinced it's over. You see how far reaching his advice. It's not just that his advice was the best. He also knew that the other advice was terrible and that they were going to lose.
Right.
And he's right. Achitofel's not wrong. He's absolutely right. They're going to lose because of following Hushai's advice. That's just the unbelievable thing that's going on over here. It wasn't just that Avshalom was convinced to accept a second best suggestion. He was convinced to accept the suggestion that meant disaster. And Achitofel sees it, and no one else sees it. So he goes, he writes a will. It's done. And then he is strangled.
Because he thinks that he's going to be killed anyway?
Yes.
Okay.
Okay, now, the Gemara tells us, a story. Well, let me tell you what the Gemara says first, and I'll tell you, this story is meant to prove a point. That's how we get to the story. Most of the time when there are stories in the Gemara, even though the stories help fill in for us a lot of historical facts, but most of the time when the Gemara brings a story, it's not for the sake of telling us the story in and of itself. It's to prove a point the Gemara is trying to make, and then tangentially gets into the story. So the Gemara makes a statement that Kilas Chacham, the curse of a wise man, afilu al chinam, even if it's for no reason, it will come true. The curse of a Talmud Chacham will come true, even if it's baseless. even if there was no reason to issue the curse, nevertheless it's going to come true. The Gemara says, Minolan. How do we know that? The Gemara says, Me'achitofel. We know it from Achitofel, from the story of Achitofel. So what happened with Achitofel? So the Gemara says that when David HaMelech was going to dig the foundation of the Beis HaMikdash, he went to dig the foundation. Now, in the Beis HaMikdash, there is a very deep hole called the Shisin. What are the Shisin? The Shisin was a very, very deep hole right underneath the Mizbeach, under the altar, the main Mizbeach, the one outside, the one that all the Karbanos were brought on. Those deep holes were when they did Nisuch Hayayin and Nisuch Hamayim, the libations of wine the whole year round and water only on Sukkos, they would pour into, there were the two holes that the Gemara calls them nostrils, chotmen. There are two holes in the Mizbeach. One was for wine, was for oil, and they would pour the wine or the oil in, and it would go under, it go through the Mizbeach, and then into these holes, these shisin, that were located underneath the Mizbeach. Those holes were very, very deep. Now, we have to know something about the I guess we'll call it the geology of the earth. We have to know something about it, in that we know there is something called the Tehom. It's mentioned in Bereishis, all the way in the beginning. It says V'choshech al pnei Tehom, which means darkness on the face of the depths. Tehom is deep water, not the oceans. There's something called Tehom. Now, scientifically, I don't think that they have discovered vast reservoirs of water very deep beneath the crust of the earth. But we know there is such a thing. Now, you never know when the term mayim, water, is used, exactly what it means. It may not mean exactly what we also call water. For example, we know that there is mayim hatachtonim, there's the water down here, and there's mayim ha'elyonim, there's water upstairs. Well, science hasn't discovered any water upstairs, right? But we know there is. So either there is water that science hasn't discovered, which would not shock me. There's a lot of things science hasn't discovered yet, which does not bother me at all. Or there's something science has discovered, which is also appropriately called mayim. Just that we're associating mayim with this, and really can also mean something similar. Mm-hmm. Maybe it means a place you can't breathe. Mm-hmm. Maybe that's what it means. In which case, space. What else? Perhaps that's what it means. I don't know. I'm just, making, conjecture. Fine. At any rate, there is something called Tehom. That's for sure. Mm-hmm. And it's somewhere deep down. But it's very deep. It's not easily accessible. The Tehom is when Hashem brought the Mabul, there was rain from the heavens, and the Tehom came upstairs also. It was a sandwich. Water from downstairs, water from upstairs, inundated the world. That was when he brought the Mabul. The Tehom plays an integral role, which actually is a part of this Gemara we're about to quote, in keeping the ground saturated. In addition to the rain saturating the ground, the Tehom also seeps into the ground from underneath, which also appropriately saturates the ground. Without the Tehom, then the ground would be too dry. It would not be able to sustain life. The Tehom, in theory, could drown the world. If the water from the Tehom would well up, it would drown the whole world. But Hashem doesn't allow it to. It keeps it down. So the Shisin, which are dug very, very deeply, and don't ask me how they were able to dig such deep holes without the drills and all that they have today, I don't know. But they were able to dig a very, 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 very deep holes in the ground. And they got down close to the Tehom. So as they're digging down, the Gemara tells us, the truth is the Gemara Yerushalmi has a much broader version of the story, and Rashi in the Gemara in the Bavli, in the Babylonian Talmud, there Rashi quotes the Yerushalmi to fill in the rest of the story. So he got very far down and he encountered a chaspa. A chaspa means a piece of pottery. Now, pottery doesn't just right. It's not just there. Pottery, right? Pottery is
it. Diggers of the holes found the pottery.
Yes, okay. He found a piece of pottery. Right? When an archaeologist finds a piece of pottery, he celebrates because it means there was something there.
Yeah.
Right. So they found the piece of pottery, and it must have been a large piece. I'm not sure exactly, but it was a very significant piece of pottery, and it was in the way. He couldn't dig down. He had to remove it. The pottery, the way the Medrash says it is, spoke to David and said, "Don't move me, because I'm covering the tahom."
Oh.
And David didn't listen, and he pulled out the pottery. I imagine it's a very large piece, and he got it lifted out of there. And when he did that, the waters of the tahom came gushing up. And the Gemara says it would threaten to drown the entire world. So there's this torrent of water now gushing up. Where? At the place of the Beis HaMikdash. So David said, "Does anybody know, is it permissible to write the name of Hashem on this piece of pottery and throw it back into the water? Because in so doing, the water will dissolve the name of Hashem." So it would be erasing the name of Hashem. "In order to get the water to stop and not to drown the world." Now you can ask a question.
It's moving very slowly, the water.
No, I don't think so. Not from the way the story is told. It sounds like it was. It sounds like it was an emergency. From the way the Gemara says it. It sounds like it was like really bad. So does anybody know? No one said anything. So then David said, now we have to deal with this a little later. The Gemara doesn't tell us, how did David know that writing the name of Hashem on the pottery and throwing it in would stop the water? That seems to be a given. David understood. If he writes the name of Hashem on this piece of pottery and throws it in, the water will stop drowning the world. But he didn't know if he could. He said, does anybody know, can you do it?
To save a life, can't you do almost anything?
Yes.
So what's a shiloh?
Good question. Good. It's a good question.
And for a sota, you do the same thing.
Excellent. Excellent. Perfect.
I'm not getting the question.
You are, this is an incredible compliment. You are thinking like Achitofel.
Let's hope for a different ending, please.
You're thinking like him is a good compliment. So David said, does anybody know? No one said anything. Then David said, anybody who knows the answer to my question and doesn't tell me should be strangled. Then the Gemara says, Achitofel then made a kal vachomer. He made a logical argument. He said, if in order to preserve the peace between a husband and wife, the Torah says that you should take the name of God and erase it in the water, here where the question is the entire world, of course it should be okay. And he said to David, it's permissible. And David wrote the name of Hashem on the pottery, threw it back in, and everything was good. In fact, the Gemara says the Tahom sunk so far down, it was too far down. It was supposed to be, the way it says it is, 1,000 amos? I don't remember, 1,000 amos, 1,000 mil? I don't remember. Below the surface, and it went down 16,000 instead of 1,000. So David then had to recite. That's when he composed the 15 Shir Hamalos, which means the song of ascent, to lift the Tahom back up to its proper place. Okay.
He already knew these Shir Hamalos.
No, I think he composed them. Okay. He composed them then. Right. Well, after they had gone down. So the Gemara says, well, that was a baseless curse. That whoever knows this and doesn't tell me should get strangled, because in the end, Achitofel told David what to do. Nevertheless, Achitofel was strangled. So you see, the curse came true. Says the Marsha,
Right. So should Achitophel had not told him, then he wouldn't have been strangled?
Good, good. Says the Marshal, why did David pick strangling? Because they all were going to drown. Drowning is strangulation. So David said, used that as the curse.
Also, because if you're not speaking out, strangling is okay. Just the opposite. You can't speak
okay,
out.
Okay, good, good. And says the Marsha, that Gemara doesn't make any sense if Achitophel committed suicide. If he committed suicide, then how do you prove anything? Because he chose his method of death, which would be strangulation. How does that prove that David's curse came true? That happens to be what Achitophel chose in order to kill himself. He strangled himself. Therefore, says the Marsha, he didn't strangle himself. The Navi doesn't tell us how he was strangled, but he was. However it happened, it's not relevant. The point is that he knew he was finished. He went back home, he wrote a will, and he was strangled somehow. Somehow, he was drowned, or somehow he was strangled.
Does hanak mean to strangle?
Vayechanek. And he was...
Yeah, but it's not a reflexive verb. So it's how why would he strangle himself? It looks like it would be a transitive verb. He was strangled.
Yes, it's right. Exactly. He was strangled. It could mean he was strangled because he did it himself. But the way the Marsha says it is it was not, he did not strangle himself. He was strangled somehow.
That's how it looks.
Yeah.
But how did the curse come true when he did tell David? Mm. The curse said if someone knows and doesn't tell.
So apparently since, that's what it means. It was for no reason. He said even though David had attached a clause, but it still came true.
So the curse of a Talmud Chacham comes true even if there's no reason.
That's what the Gemara says.
I think, one could also look at it that Ahitophel may have told, but he didn't tell when he should have. There's a delay there, So he says anybody who doesn't tell will be strangled. Well, he already had been in the ranks of those who did not tell. Eventually he did tell, but there's still a gap of time, even after the curse is delivered.
Yeah.
But all those people who didn't tell...
Anybody who knows it.
Nobody else knew it but him. Is that what we're going into the assumption of?
Okay, well, hold on. Wait. Now, the Marsha goes further and explains like this. Why is that called a curse for no reason? It was because the Gemara after this says a Talmud Chacham's curse that is conditional always comes true. This was a conditional curse. Anybody who knows and doesn't say should get strangled. That's a conditional curse. So it's not, I wouldn't say it's for no reason. So the Marsha says, no, David knew that it was permissible. He knew it. Just like Achitophel knew it. David knew it. But David didn't want to speak in front of Achitophel. Since Achitophel was one of David's Rabbeim, he didn't want to speak out in front of Achitophel. What he was trying to do was to prompt Achitophel to say it. He knew, but he didn't want to say without, he didn't want to step in front of his Rebbe. So he therefore prompted him. Anybody who knows this doesn't say, and that loosened Achitophel's tongue.
Why doesn't he just do it? Why even ask the question?
Good. That's what you asked before, right? Good. So hold on. We're going to cover this.
Why would Achitophel have kept silent?
Right.
Why would it take this prompting?
Good.
His own life was at stake. So
right.
Was everybody else's.
Right. Okay.
And also, if David said anyone who knows, doesn't tell, but you're saying David knew the answer. So he himself?
Yeah. Okay, he obviously didn't mean himself.
Okay.
Now, let's understand. It's a strange story. And what is really strange about it is that why would it be that this pottery would be in the way of... How did the pottery get there? And... why would it be in the way of digging the shisin for the Beis HaMikdash? And what's his business? The pottery says, don't do it! Don't do it! David says, I'm going to do it. No, don't! No! Right?
Isn't that area where the world was created? Isn't that from where the world was
created? The Evan Shisiyah.
Right.
The Evan Shisiyah. Right. Well, it's
so
it's,
that stone pottery could be. A stone.
I don't think it's the same. I don't think it's the same. But it says you're in the same place. It's the same area,
yeah,
right?
If the pottery told him, you'd think that he would listen.
Right.
And
right.
Notice the strangulation is not being able to speak in the whole thing.
Yeah.
Is the pottery
good.
Spoke.
Good. But I'll tell you, whenever pottery speaks to me, I listen.
Right. Or a donkey too, right?
Right.
Listen to that.
Good. Okay. So we know the Gemara tells us that this is relevant to Shavuos. The Gemara tells us that the pasuk says Vayhi erev Vayivoker Yom Hashishi. All the other days it says Yom Rishon, Yom Echad, Yom Sheni, Yom Shishi, but it says Yom Hashishi, the sixth day, with an extra hey. So the Gemara says, what's the extra hey? Because the world was Tolui Va'omed. The world was hanging in the balance until the sixth day of Sivan, till the day that the Jews were going to be given the Torah. If we would accept the Torah, then the creation of the world would now be solidified. But if we would not accept the Torah, the world would be destroyed. There'd be no point in the world. So the entire creation of Hashem was still not completely settled. It wasn't really finished. It wasn't done until the sixth day of Sivan that we accepted the Torah. And that's when the world was now completely settled. When we accepted the Torah, the whole world trembled. It was literally shaking. The Gemara says, the Umos HaOlam, the nations of the world, went running to the only person that they knew of, who they could speak to, and ask what's going on. They went to Bilam. Bilam was a Navi. They ran to Bilam. What's happening? And Bilam said, Hashem owes Liamo Yitain. Hashem is giving strength to his nation. He's giving them the Torah. He explained what was happening. And he said, Hashem Yivarech Esamo Vashalom. That's a whole different discussion. So, the whole world was shaking. Why was the whole world shaking? Because it was at that moment that either there would be a cataclysmic explosion, which would destroy the entire world, or the world would settle. That was the point in time. It was the sixth day of Sivan, and right then the world was now in the balance of either erupting in a decimating explosion, everything would be gone, or now it'll get settled. And of course, it settled because we accepted the Torah. When the whole world started to shake like that, the Tahom was ready to rise up and inundate the world. Because that's the way Hashem would have, I said explosion, what Hashem would have done is he would have covered the entire world in water. That's how it would be the end of the world.
But didn't he say he would never do that?
Yes,
then?
He would never do it as long as it was a new punishment to people. This wouldn't be a punishment. This would be, there's no purpose for the world to exist. The whole world was already predicated on this event. Either we accept it or we don't. And Hashem already set in motion the physical means for the world. He set it up. That on the sixth day of Sivan, in that year, it was already set up that there would be this erupting of the Tahom and the whole world wiped out. With the accepting of the Torah, that wasn't necessary. And Hashem kept the Tahom with a piece of pottery. So when archaeologists find a piece of pottery, it's true someone had been there before, but it's not necessarily man.
Uh-huh.
It could be God. Right. Hashem capped the Tahom with this piece of pottery. Now, David is digging the Beis HaMikdash, and he comes across this pottery. The Pasuk says in Shir HaShirim, the Pasuk says that it refers to, remember, Shir HaShirim is a love song between a man and woman. The man is Hashem and the woman is us. So it says referring to the man, it says Biyom Chasu Naso, on the day of his wedding, Ubiyom Simchas Libo, on the day of the joy of his heart, says the Gemara. Yom Chasu Naso, the day of his wedding, Zematan Torah. That's the day of the giving of the Torah. Yom Simchas Libo, the day of the joy of his heart, Zebinyan Beis HaMikdash. That's the building of the Beis HaMikdash. The Gemara is linking these two events. The event of Matan Torah and the event of the building of the Beis HaMikdash. When the Torah was given, at the moment the Torah was given, we were Baruch Hashem, we accepted it. All the Jews were healed from any kind of blemish. Those who were blind were able to see, those who were deaf were able to hear. Everybody was completely healed, and we received the Torah. At that moment, we were moving the world back to the way it was prior to the sin of Adam HaRishon. And had we been able to hold it there, we would have been almost, and as the next step would have been to go beyond Adam HaRishon, but that would be getting us towards perfection. Then, unfortunately, 40 days later, we did the Chet HaEgel, which the Gemara calls, the way the Gemara says about the Chet HaEgel, the sin of the golden calf, the Gemara calls that like a kala who's mezana tachas chupasa. Mm-hmm. Like a kala who commits adultery under the chuppah. We were there, under the chuppah, at Matan Torah, at Har Sinai, and we go off to the Egel Azav. That's why it's such a terrible avera. But again, you have this analogy to marriage. That's going on over there. Okay. So that reversed a lot of the good things that happened with Matan Torah. The people who used to be blind became blind again. The people who used to be deaf became deaf again. All the bad things came back. Of course, we got the second set of luchos, which we began the process of teshuva. Now it's time to build the Beis HaMikdash. What is David thinking? He knows that this thing is capping the Tahom. He knows way more than we know. I mean, he's aware of this. So what is he doing? David is also aware of the fact that the Tahom was the way that Hashem was going to destroy the world if we wouldn't have accepted the Torah. But we did, and it was capped. So then why pull it off? If you're pulling it off, aren't you subjecting the world now to be destroyed? Capping the Tahom means the threat is still there, but it's being held down. But the threat is still there. If you could remove the cap and the Tahom still doesn't come up, that means the threat is no longer there. David evidently thought that with the building of the Beis HaMikdash, the threat is going to be removed completely. Meaning, with Matan Torah, because we accepted the Torah, Yom Chasunasa, the day of the Chasna, the marriage of Hashem and the Jewish people, the threat was capped. Yom Simchas Libo, the day of the joy of Hashem's heart, that the building of the Beis HaMikdash, the threat is completely gone. We don't need this anymore. And in fact, it makes sense. It's there. It's in the way. It's blocking what needs to be done. And we're going to remove it now because it's not necessary anymore. But he removed it and the Tahom came up, which means he was wrong. He thought that it was time to remove it, but it wasn't time to remove it. Will there be a time to remove it? Yes. At some point in the future, when we have finally done a complete teshuva and we get back to the way we were before the chet of the egel, which means before the chet of Adam HaRishon, we get back to more of a pristine state, there will be no need even for the threat anymore. You won't have to cap it. But David made a mistake. It was not time to remove that cap.
I don't get it. He knew that he couldn't build the Beis HaMikdash. He knew it was going to have to wait for his son. So if he thought that the building of the Beis HaMikdash would mean that maybe the threat didn't need to be there anymore, why wouldn't he have just told Shlomo, when you build the Beis HaMikdash, because I can't build it, it's going to have to wait. When you do it, you test it.
That's a good question. I don't have a strong answer to that, except to say that David was expected to build the foundation. We're going to see later, he's the one who purchases the ground for it. I mean, he is supposed to lay the foundation. And in the end, remember, the Beis HaMikdash is always called that it is in the merit of David, even though Shlomo built it.
Right. I know the doors wouldn't open without, I understand that.
Right, so he can't physically build it, but he could lay the foundation, and it's in his merit.
So
that
how
it's
does
built.
He know that he can physically remove it?
That's a good question. I don't know the answer. That's a good question. But wait, listen to what we hear what happens over here. So David removes the thing and the water comes up. So David realizes that it's premature, which means we're still living with the consequences of the Egel Hazav. We haven't reversed the Egel Hazav. What was the sin of the Egel Hazav? It was like a kala who was committing adultery under the chuppah. Says David, and Achitophel says this as well, right? Can I write the name of Hashem and erase it?
Because we're the Sota.
Because we're the Sota. Exactly right. David says, you know how you can repair this problem? Do what the Torah prescribes for a Sota. A Sota is suspected of adultery. Right now we are trying to do teshuva. We are not committing adultery, but we're still in the there's a threat over here. There's a threat, which means we're still in the mode of suspected adulterers. Therefore, the way to stop this flood is the same thing you'll do with a sota. And just like with a sota, you can erase Hashem's name to get the water to keep her from to restore the shalom. Here we can restore the shalom as well with the name of Hashem being erased. So it's not just, oh yeah, you know what? There's this mitzvah of sota. We can do the same thing. It's more than that. David was deliberately using the sota as a way of what when you erase Hashem's name, what is that proving? It's proving that she didn't commit the sin. That's the whole point. The whole point is she drinks and that she does not blow up, and that restores her husband's trust, and that restores the relationship. That's the whole point. Here, what he's saying is, it's true we did sin then, but that's not a secret. But right now, we are doing better, and we're trying to get better, and we're going to restore the peace. And so the erasing of the name of Hashem gets the Tahom to go back down, and they are not wiped out. Because this is Yom Chasunoso, Yom Simchas Libo, the day of his wedding, the day of the gladness of his heart. The Torah, and then the Beis HaMikdash. So, it's true, I don't have a good answer for why didn't David just do it? Why does he have to get approval? Could be because he doesn't want to go against his Rebbe, which also is part of accepting the Torah, that we accept that there's a hierarchy, and we accept that a person doesn't speak out of line, and that's all part of the acceptance of the Torah. Could be that's part of it over here as well. But here, that's the story that happened, and it is within this story that Achitophel is now going to receive the curse of being strangled. But when does he actually get strangled? When does he actually get strangled? When he rebels against David HaMelech. Right. That's when it happens. It doesn't happen, it could have happened another time in his life. But because he rebels against David, that is where the strangulation happens. The rebellion is also, what is adultery after all? It is a rebellion. And that's what's happening. Yeah.
So when David and his men were down in the valley, and the guy was up there yelling curses and throwing rocks at them, why didn't those curses come true? Because he told us he was a Talmud Chacham also.
Yeah, they do.
Oh, we just haven't gotten to it yet.
Yeah, they do come true. We're gonna find later. It's a good point.
To make sure that the power of the curse was.
Yeah. No. Right. The only thing is, we weren't told what the curses were over there.
No.
Yeah, but I'm pretty sure, if I remember correctly, it's just in the back of my mind. I'm pretty sure that later on we're gonna come across those curses.
Okay.
I hope I'm right. I hope we remember about it. We're going to come across Shimi Ben Gera again later.
Okay.
So when we do, we'll have to remember.
It's definitely a Talmud Chacham, Okay.
Does the phrase that he was buried in the kever of his father serve as evidence that he didn't kill himself?
It could be.
I mean, that's an extraneous phrase.
Yes.
Why do we care where he came?
No, it's true. But there is the Chazal.
Well, I was thinking of Avraham because Avraham also saddled his donkey, and also is buried in the place of his ancestors. I think that there's something there.
Yeah. No. Chazal say something over here, but I'm only remembering now. I didn't remember when I was preparing. I remember that there is something about this, about being buried in the burial of his father. I don't remember.
It would seem to indicate that he was buried with honor.
Yeah. Well, when a person is put to death by Beis Din, then they're buried in a in the burial plot for those who were executed, which is a bizayon. That's degrading. Here that didn't happen. But I think
unless
I recall,
it happened in two generations.
And a suicide is not generally buried in.
Yeah, it. Yeah. But there's something else. There's something else about this. If I remember correctly, something about being buried in the burial of his father, that it means that he lived up to his father, was greater than his father. I have to see if I can find that.
But it's both like Bilam and Avraham both saddled their own donkeys. And
yes, yeah, I noticed that too. I didn't know what to do with that. That's it. I didn't know what to do with that. That's a good point.
I think it shows eagerness. He's yeah. eager to leave the palace and go home and write his will and get all with him.
Don't forget that Achitofel is the grandfather of Bas Sheva. We mentioned this before. And the great-grandfather of Shlomo HaMelech. He was part of this rebellion, even though the rebellion is in order to usurp his own grandson from being the next king.
Why did he do that again?
Right. Yeah, that's it. Right.
Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.